Welcome to Talking Cybersecurity, a weekly podcast listened to in over 50 countries. My name is Richard Herron, and I am your presenter. In the Talking Cybersecurity podcast, expect to hear all things related to the cybersecurity industry, whether that's getting your first job, interviews, board reports, data breaches, different approaches to cybersecurity, or conferences. None of the opinions expressed on this podcast by myself or guests are necessarily reflective of the opinions of the organisations we represent. If you want to continue the conversation, feel free to join the LinkedIn group, Talking Cybersecurity. I use Pixabay for most of the music heard on this podcast. Hi everyone, ni hao. Welcome back to Talking Cybersecurity, episode 62. Today is Sunday, March 3, 2024. Hope you're all well. Today I wanted to discuss one of the many three-letter security acronyms with you. This time it is those magic letters, DLP. Some refer to it as data loss prevention, others call it data leakage protection, and others will refer to DLP as ILP, as in information loss protection. I'll probably use a combination of those terms in this episode. So what do we mean when we talk about data loss prevention? Or is that protection? Anyways, as the name suggests, it's a way of preventing or protecting against data or information loss. And like many security practices, it uses a combination of people, processes, and technology to work efficiently. So that's the 3,000 foot level overview. What does it mean in reality? Probably time for a better definition of data loss. A reasonable definition is when people who are authorized to access confidential information take actions that they're not authorized to do. The important bit there is take actions that they are not authorized to do. So what does that mean? Well, it can occur, and I emphasize the word can occur, when staff send work data to an unauthorized destination, e.g. home email address, competitor, wrong person, send data to an authorized destination without any form of protection, copy confidential data to unencrypted USB, CD, DVDs, or store data in repositories that may not be secure. So what are the risks of information loss to your organisation? When I hear risk, I think in terms, like hopefully most of you do, I think in terms of likelihood and consequence and controls. The likelihood of an information loss event will be dictated by at least three things. The strength of your organization's controls, including security awareness that can be used to counter the common information loss activities which exist in all organizations. That is, staff sending confidential work data to home. Real issues will be the potential interception or sending it to the wrong address. Staff sending their personal details home. No issue, but they do that at their own risk. Staff leaking info to the media. I've seen that in a number of organisations, and unfortunately, it can sometimes take an event like that for a company to decide to implement a monitoring tool such as DLP. Staff sending legitimate work to their customers. That's great when they encrypt it, but of course there are risks in unencrypted transmissions. The size of your company will probably dictate the likelihood of an information loss event, i.e. if you are a weddings company where you're a one-man band and have a relatively small amount of customer records, then the likelihood of information loss of hundreds of thousands of records is extremely unlikely. Unless, of course, you're doing 100 weddings a day, which would be very unlikely. The nature of your company. So if you're a large bank with lots of staff, with lots of information, you're probably increasing your likelihood of an information loss event. Thus, why larger corporations tend to invest in technology, people and processes to protect against information loss. And those larger companies invest a lot of money. So that's the likelihood being dictated by the strength of your controls and the nature of your company. Let's talk about consequence. You can have all the controls in place, but if there is an information loss event, you do need to deal with the consequences. So this is the so what question. Why do I need to protect my data? The reasons are this: legislative and regulatory compliance. You may be in breach of one or more of the following: Privacy Act, PCI DSS, fines from bodies such as ASIC, HIPAA regulations in the US, and other legislation that I'm just not aware of. Financial, so loss of profit, loss of share value, loss of customer, potential litigation, customer impact, identity theft, disclosure of information. It is not uncommon to hear about customer details being sold on the black market. The last one is the big one, reputation. No one wants to be subject to scrutiny in the media, whether that's the TV, newspaper, industry journal, or what is absolutely big time these days, social media. Okay, let's get back to basics. Security is all about protecting customer and corporate information. Nothing more, nothing less. Someone actually vehemently disagreed with me that last week, and all I will say about that is no comment. It's not about maintaining your company's certifications, as someone said to me recently, nor is it about just complying with regulations. It is about protecting customer and corporate information, and what I mentioned a minute ago, your reputation. So as you know, there are 1,001 ways of protecting customer and corporate information. You can have usernames and passwords, endpoint detection response, network detection response, managed detection response, firewalls, SOCs, SIEMs, application whitelisting. I could go on, but I won't. And of course, data loss prevention, or protection, is another one of those processes. So way back in the early 2000s, I was working in a company that had a number of controls in place that companies today would be happy to have. We had some really good leading controls, and we were quite mature in the SDLC space, which wasn't overly a big thing way back then. Despite all that, we weren't mature with respect to having an easy way of knowing what data was being copied to removable drives or what was being sent through email. DLP was just starting to make a name for itself, so we investigated further. We did our due diligence, easy for you to say, due diligence, and we eventually decided to buy one of two of the leading products at the time. It didn't take long to get the system up and running. Before you knew it, we were monitoring staff emails that were being triggered by what's known as out-of-the-box policies. All DLP products come with out-of-the-box policies, such as PCI DSS rule that would detect credit card numbers, Australian tax file numbers, American social security numbers, driver's licenses, etc. We monitored the rules for a few days, and then, in what now would I hope you would agree, is a really risky and impulsive move. After a few days, we decided to switch from monitoring mode to enforcement mode. Enforcement meaning blocking. So blocking certain data types that we had flagged to block. We added credit card numbers and a few others, such as tax file numbers and driver's license numbers. Because we'd rushed into enforcement mode, handy hint, don't do that, we didn't appreciate there would be exceptions, i.e. we didn't know all the intricacies of business functions, so it was pretty reckless in hindsight to jump straight into enforcement mode. To be fair, we didn't just activate this software and enable a couple of policies. We did pre-warn the business by letting them know what we were going to do, how we were going to do it, and what rules we were going to deploy. And I do remember speaking with a number of very nervous business representatives about the impact of the blocking rules. So early lessons learnt with this particular deployment were monitor first. How long you choose to do that will be determined on what you see filtering through. I would recommend at least 3 months to monitor, because that would cater for daily, weekly, monthly, or perhaps quarterly processes that may generate emails with that particular data type you're monitoring. Another handy hint, you have to get your business involved from the start. Explain what DLP policies you intend to implement, ask them whether enforcing DLP rules will break business processes, and when you do start getting the results through the DLP system, you need to show them which of their users are potentially putting the business at risk by emailing out that particular data type. So plan to meet with the business rep, say, every month and show them a printout of what their business unit staff are emailing out. All DLP system reports can be personalized, so you need to configure the reports so they show something similar to, and you can imagine this in a Excel spreadsheet, right? These would be the columns. Date, name, business unit, what DLP rule was triggered, so it might be the credit card rule, who they emailed, the subject of the email, and how many of that data type they sent. Oh, and the size and name of any attachment would come in handy. A report with all that information will give the reader an extremely good idea of who sent what to who. Now, I'll talk about a few gotchas when it comes to DLP, and I'll mention a few others later on in this episode. I was working for a global company at one stage, and what happens in these global companies is that one region dictates what happens in the other regions. So at one point in time, the strong region, I'll refer to them as, stated that all regions had to deploy every rule that the stronger and much more regulated region had. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, as the strong region had a lot of rules relating to their country that just didn't fit with our country. But we had to do what we were told, so we adopted all of the 20 or so rules that the strong region had implemented. Just on that, consider this. When your DLP system is interrogating every single email that exits your organisation, looking for the characteristics of 20 or so diverse rules, it can slow the email system right down. It can also have a significant impact when copying data to USB. Okay, so we were more or less forced to activate the 20 or so rules. Then suddenly at 5 p.m. on a particular Friday, and I still remember that particular day, a very worried sales team called me and said that their proposal that they were sending to a prospective client that was due by 5 p.m. on the Friday, it had been blocked, and did DLP have anything to do with that? So I jumped onto the DLP system straight away and saw that yes, the email had been blocked. It looked like the offending rule was some obscure mergers and acquisitions rule that the overseas stronger region had enforced upon us. So I quickly disabled it, and the sales team were able to send through their proposal to the customer, and the customer didn't mind receiving it at 20 past 5 instead of the 5 o'clock deadline. At 9 a.m. on Monday, I received a wonderful surprise. Well, I'd say it was more of a surprise than wonderful. The CIO visited me at my desk, and this was the global CIO, and he berated me about the rule we'd implemented. I told him it wasn't our rule, it was one that the overseas had enforced upon us, but he just told me how much it was my fault in his colourful language, and I won't repeat the language that he used, but you can imagine. Now, I've made a few mistakes in the workplace, but this wasn't one of them. But this particular big chief was always right, according to him anyway, so I just copped it until I left a few months later of my own accord. So the lesson learnt here is don't have too many rules, and understand what rules you do have in place to a real granular degree. And if you need to follow another region's rule, review them and put up a good case if one or more of the rules don't make sense to your region. Later on, we implemented DLP for USB. The additional time it took to copy some files that normally took 5 minutes to copy to USB ended up taking, 5 to 10 times slower with all the rules in place. So be careful of that if you implement DLP for your removable media. So that was my first foray into DLP. Another role I had was in a company where we did DLP on a huge scale. So we had a dedicated staff member to ensure there was minimal data loss for our company, and he was supported by another group who was sort of like an investigations group. And they're the ones who also activated the rules in production. So this time around, we monitored for 12 months, not for 5 days, we monitored for 12 months, a whole year before we even considered any enforcement of policies. And we had a stack of governance over the whole process. So we had a business steering committee who approved all the rules we put in place, even if it was just the monitoring rules in email. But the same steering committee did have the power to dictate when we would turn on enforcement policies. They're empowered to make this decision as long as the security team could show that they had done their due diligence beforehand to prove that the whole organisation wasn't going to come to a grinding halt if a DLP enforcement rule was turned on. The 12 months was great to build relationships with the business and get their buy-in and their incisive thoughts on what rules we needed. And just as an FYI, when we did activate our first rule, and this was just a monitoring rule, not a blocking rule, but when we did activate our first monitoring rule, let me tell you what we saw. Much to our astonishment, 600,000 of the particular data type leaving the organisation were seen and reported into the DLP system and therefore reported back to the business. Our business steering committee thought there might be maybe 1,000 or 2,000 of that data type. Never in their mind did they ever consider there'd be 600,000 of the particular data type leaving that organisation. So we certainly did things such as enforce mandatory TLS between business-to-business destinations, because we wanted to protect the data, and we did educate the staff about the better, more safer ways of getting that information to customers. For example, instead of sending customer statements, they could have easily logged into a secure portal and viewed the statements themselves. One of the lessons I've learnt being involved in data loss protection for a couple of decades now is that the problem is much bigger than you think. So if you don't think you've got a data loss problem now, you're dreaming. You really are. You would be amazed how much information your staff are sending out in email. So you've got to get the business involved and you have to put out monthly reports showing who is sending what to where. Assuming you've got a DLP system, that is. By having the totals, you can then measure how successful your change management campaign is. And I will talk about security awareness / change management a little bit later. So for example, those 600,000 plus data types we saw being sent, we put controls in place over time that cut that insecure transmission down by 99.9%. That's why you need those numbers recorded. It certainly shows your progress. Just as an absolutely irrelevant side note, one of the things I'll never forget about this DLP installation was a big celebration in a city pub, and it was at some stage during the DLP project. I think it was perhaps when we first put in our enforcement rules, our blocking rules. So this is how it went. We all went to the pub and the project manager stood up and gave a speech how proud she was that the team had come together and really delivered the benefits of this program. She then said she wanted to recognise one of the project team with an award. This award is for your relentless pursuit of perfection, yada, 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 yada. And then she hands out the award to the person who activated the rules in production and tweaked some of the out-of-the-box rules. The staff member who I thought was the real saviour of the project got zero recognition. He, she, or they, had actively met with the business week in, week out. They'd instigated practices such that they'd reduced the amount of insecure transmission of numerous data types by somewhere between 90 to 99.9%, and they received absolutely no recognition. And as I've said before in this podcast, just keep in mind, sometimes you're going to be the pigeon and sometimes you're going to be the statue. Enough said on that. Moving on. So some of the amazing things I've either seen, heard, or read about when it comes to DLP implementations include, but are not limited to, the following. Here we go. Right email, wrong recipient. So this actually addresses an aspect of data loss that I've probably haven't mentioned yet and is really important component of DLP, and that is the primary use of DLP is to detect, dare I say it, stupid behaviour. And stupid is probably a bit harsh of a word to use. What I'm trying to say is that it's not really a tool you use to detect fraud. It's more people not realising how they're putting the company in peril, as well as finding what we would call mistakes. So there have been 1,001 cases where someone has attached, say, a report in an email, started entering the name of the recipient in the to field, only to discover that a name in cache has replaced the intended recipient, and thus the right mail has gone to the wrong recipient. So that's one thing you'll need to educate your staff about. with respect to DLP, you've got to be sure of the recipient. Now, I previously mentioned fraud, and it often gets detected when what is known as a false positive kicks in. So that means that, say you're looking for text file numbers, a rule's been triggered, and when you open the email, you can't see any text file numbers, but what you do see is something disturbing nonetheless. So what one person told me was a false positive that was triggered in their organisation. The DLP staff member clicked on the offending email and they didn't see any text file numbers, but what they did see was a number of screenshots from the company's training material being sent to their spouse. So it was obviously something in the images that they copied to the email that somehow it resembled a text file number. So to cut a really long story short, the spouse was setting up their own training and learning company. They asked their partner to copy and paste all their training documentation so they could copy it. DLP accidentally discovered this, and let's just say the staff member no longer works at that organisation. So I hope you got that. Someone on the outside was setting up their own training and learning company. They asked their partner, hey, send us what your company's got and I'll copy it. So that's what their partner did, but DLP detected that by mistake, and that staff member had to be exited from the organisation. I mentioned DLP wasn't primarily about detecting fraud, although I've just given you a fraud example, but it mostly... And on that note, we better have a break for a week until we hear part two next week, where we complete our discussion on data loss prevention. Or is it data leakage protection? Not sure. A lot of you may not care, but the AFL season is about to commence. I cannot wait for that one. Time to go. Look, quick hi's to Sarah, H-Dog, J-Dog, Louisa, Dan the Man, Wasim, Ryan, Daisy, and many others who may be tuning in. Actually, I saw a friend of the podcast, Nigel Fair, on Channel 9's Under Investigation last Monday night. Very impressed with your appearance, Professor. Okay, that's it for this week. As I always say, hope you have a good week. Hope you have a great week coming up. And if you're in a meeting and you want more clarification, do what Simon Sinek suggests and ask why. Why is it so? See you all next week. Bye.